Hey, before we start, we were hoping you could take a few seconds to give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It means a lot to us that so many of you are listening, and we hope you can continue to support us by leaving us a little bit of feedback. Cheers. Hey everybody, this is Connor White. This is going to be our first ever episode of Liquid Chords Live. So I'm just going to get our special guest, see if he's ready to join us.
Liquid Chords. Talk about the music in your life.
Liquid Chords.
How you getting on, Ryan?
Oh, good, thanks. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. How many pints have you had?
Fair share, to be fair. It's not something that I'd normally publicise, but, you know, normally St. Patrick's Day doesn't count, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah. Are you well? How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm just relieved that this has actually worked okay. I was having visions of me scrambling, but it looks like we're doing okay. You had your first live gig. Or was it your first live gig since lockdown? Or the streaming gig?
The one today?
Yeah,
no, I did one at Christmas, and it's one of them things, I didn't want to, like, do one every week, because it's just too much, you know, so I figured, you know, Christmas was, it's kind of hard not doing a gig at Christmas, and so we did that show, and it went down well, and I thought, well, I'd love to do another one of them, but I don't want to just do them sporadically and all that, so whenever I thought about Paddy's Day, I was like, and you know, the lockdown rules and stuff, we don't find out yet. So I knew that it wasn't going to be the day that we all wanted it to be. So I just figured I'd put another one on today. So it went well. But I was talking to you earlier and you said about my AirPods and I was like, yeah, no, that's fine. And then this never happens to me. Like, I never let them die. And as soon as I picked them up, they were just flat dead. I don't think they've ever been flat dead. And, so they're charging at the minute. So if you need me to put them in, I'll wait till I finish charging and then we can just stick them in, you know.
Yeah, no, that's grand. I'm sure Matt's probably having a fit next door. But to be, it all sounds good. All sounds good. So for people who just tuning in now, this is Liquid Chords, which is a podcast that we've had 19 episodes before you today, Ryan. And it's been,
wow,
been Dead Rabbit have kindly brought myself on to host it, and we've had 19 artists from Ireland and beyond. It's just an opportunity to showcase the wonderful musicians that we have here, artists and writers. And so for anybody tuning in, be sure to go back and check it out. And this episode will be available on Tuesday next week, so we will have that ready for you. So yeah, it'll be available on all major streaming sites, and that's my plug done. So Ryan, it's really great to have you on, and I think probably quite fitting. There's definitely elements of Irish folk and that sort of storytelling in your music. Mm-hmm. Can you just, like, tell me a bit about any Irish folk influences you have, or traditional, and actually influences just beyond that? What sort of
literally
stuff were you into growing up?
Literally all of it. You know, it's kind of hard being from this island and not hearing somebody singing in a corner of a pub and singing an old song that you'd never really heard of, but that kind of just struck at you. But I think the main one for me is Paul Brady. Paul Brady did an album called, it's escaped me, The Missing Liberty Tapes. And every single song was just stunning. Really just blew my mind. But I've been influenced by everybody from here. Like, I think also because we're all from the same island, you take a bit of intrigue in everything and anything that's going on. But certainly, I mean, that album in particular just blew my mind. And I never do this, but the guy who introduced me to it was a guy called Declan McLafferty from a band called In Their Thousands. Have you heard of them?
I know Declan, yeah. Declan's a great guy.
And I never give him the credit for introducing this to me, even though it is thanks to him. And he said it to me one time as a joke, and I laughed at it, but then I actually thought about it and thought, I've actually never given him credit for introducing that album to me. So to Declan, if you ever watch this or hear this, thank you, because that album changed my life.
Oh, we'll give him a shout out. And Declan's a great musician, and In Their Thousands, phenomenal. Another example of me as an artist from this country. I must actually reach out to In Their Thousands if we get a second season. Be a brilliant guest.
And anybody who's watching this, go and check out In Their Thousands. They are phenomenal.
Yeah, amazing band. And you've actually you've also obviously done a lot of gigs. I don't know if you've done a lot of gigs, but you've certainly done recordings with Bioga as well, who amazing outfit. You tell us a bit about your experience and how you kind of got to meet them and just the work you've done with them.
I mean, I couldn't say enough about them. They are just stellar people to the point where, like, Sean Ogue from Bioga is fronting the production of my album to come out later this year. They are a phenomenal band. I think it speaks words for them. I think a thing about musicians is if you're a bit of an arsehole, it kind of spreads that way. And anybody that I've ever spoke to about Bioga is just, oh, here, what a phenomenal talent, but also great crack. And I think that's a big thing that really draws me to them, because I really, like, they are one of the best, if not the best trad bands in Ireland at the minute. But whenever I see them, I just think, oh my God, I just have so much love for them. I just want to have the crack with them, you know? But in regards to their talent, as I say, they're up there with the best. And then we were talking about this, because you know the way they played Glastonbury with Ed Sheeran? Sean Ogue was kind of talking to me about this, where he was like, I think I might be the only person who's ever played the accordion on, like, the Pyramid Stage headline show. And then we got to thinking about it, and there's only been two Irish bands that has headlined it. One of them was U2 and the other was Ash. But Ash headlined because somebody pulled out. But just random facts through there. We had that conversation the other day.
Yeah, I can't imagine Ash having an accordion in Girl from Mars or Burn BB Burn. But like, it shows you actually how massive Ash are. It's like one of those things, even with Snow Patrol, because I think Ireland, and the North Ireland in particular, Northern Ireland, so small that those acts don't seem like huge rock stars. Do you know, like, are not rock stars, but, you know, they don't seem like that far away. But these are artists that are playing in front of thousands of people, and they're just, like, known around the world. Ash is a brilliant example of that, because, like, they're just so massive in the 90s particularly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't really remember them being massive because I was too young. But you talk to people a couple of years older and they're like, no, at a point, Ash was one of the biggest deals in the world. And you're kind of like, Jesus, it's mad just coming from this wee corner of the world. Like,
I'll be on my way, leaving West LA at sunrise. Time's been great. I kinda wish that I could stay for a little while longer. I've gotta go, but I want you to know I'll be back again. I'm going home to the people I love, where I was born and raised, where the streets and the history remain, but oh, how the times have changed. I know it rains, but it's always pretty. Back to the friends that I can't take with me. We'll have a night out in Belfast City, all right.
You've been doing this for about 6 years. I know you've been doing it probably longer, but you released your first EP, Listen, 2015. What was your expectation when you released that EP? Did you ever envisage that this could be your livelihood?
Honestly, that was a passion project for me. And even at that, it wasn't a full passion project. It was a side project. So basically, I did civil engineering at university and I was in final year. And my head was just full of maths and physics, and I just needed a different outlet, you know. So I just thought, I'll just try and write a few songs and see how it goes. And although that album is so far removed from where I'm going, or EP is so far removed from where I want to create music, like the space that I want to create music in. I have that EP to thank for everything, because it got me the first few opportunities, which led to my next few opportunities. So it's a strange one. I have a love, I don't have a love hate for it, but I have a love, I don't even know what the other word would be, like a love, like, I don't know the word, but you know, it's kind of like patting a young boy in the head and going, ugh, you're trying, you know.
I definitely know what you mean. I think it's because of the longevity of it. There's not, you know, I think it's sometimes I reflect and go, it's nice to have a piece of music that was out at that point in my life, but you're so young, you're probably still feeling that you were getting better and getting better, and maybe only now you feel like you're the artist that you had envisaged and hoped that you would become. So you're looking back and probably seeing those, like, maybe weaknesses in what you perceive in your songwriting.
Yeah, and like, you know, I finished album one in terms of like the songs are done, most of it's recorded, but I've already started on album two, and it's already such a different thing to album one already. And like, we were talking about this not that long ago, where I kind of had this idea that I wanted to take everything off like Spotify and all of that and start from the album, you know, like release the album and that's the first thing. And a lot of people was like, no, but like, do you not, like, I love the journey of artists. And I was like, I love the journey of artists too. And they're like, but if you take it all away, you're taking away your journey. And that really sat with me and resonated, because I thought, I love going into the back catalogue of like bands that I love and hearing some of the songs in the early days and going, okay, it's recorded bad. It's very rough and ready, but cool. This is cool. So I nearly took all that away and then got convinced to just embrace that, because the journey is everything. Like, the journey is the entire story. And as it changes with the sounds and whatever, that's just, you know, turns in the road really. But the story starts at the beginning. So, I'm glad I was convinced out of it.
Yeah, I think there is probably a thing in the industry, maybe it's like, if it's not new, it's not new and shiny, it's not good. You know, like you kind of, but I think you should aim to push back on that, and I agree with you. I think the journey is important. It's funny, actually, when you say about the engineering, it's just kind of brought back a memory. I guess I was in uni, and I was working with a guy in O2, called Dara, and I cannot remember his second name, but he was telling me about this guy who was in his class, in his engineering class, who was doing music, and he was like, you should check him out, just check him out. We're probably, you're just inundated with music.
Yeah.
And then subsequently I learned it was you, because he was saying, you know, he plays in ollies, and he's been doing, you know, kind of like gigs in clubs and pubs, but he's doing his own thing now.
Yeah.
But like, how did the experience of doing those, you know, clubs, like, and those gigs prepare you for doing your original music?
Yeah, well, have you ever played in the pubs yourself?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know yourself straight away, you're not dealing with people who want to listen to what you're doing. They just want Wonderwall, basically, on repeat. And your job then is to find a way to convince them and interest them to listen to what you're playing now. And I think cutting your teeth in that circuit means whenever it comes to wanting people to listen to your songs at a gig, you've already got it down. You're natural at it. Once, if you can convince people to not want to listen to Wonderwall, but listen to fucking, you know, listen to Skinny Love instead, or Paul Brady, exactly. If you can get them to listen to anything, you know, if you can convince them of that, you can convince people to listen to your own music at a gig where they've came open-heartedly and open-mindedly to hear new music. So, and I've seen other people, I know a few people who struggle with the live gigs, who never did the pub scene, and that their biggest issue is like connection with the crowd and controlling the crowd. And it's not even their issue, because they're fucking brilliant at it, but you can see the difference of them really practicing and focusing on how to convince people. Whereas I think once you do the whole pub circuit, you can deal with any heckling that happens. You know, you've already got an answer for no matter what people think they're saying. You've heard it before and you've got your answer, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree with that. I don't suppose you would give us, see Deirdre there is asking for a bit of a tune. You don't suppose you would give us a little bit of something as at a midway point, maybe a bit
at
of
a midway point,
you know, something for the day?
This is a wee uke.
That's the tiniest guitar I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's a wee uke. which was given to me by, they're called Honolulu ukuleles. They're from Canada, but they're gorgeous. Look at the wee, you know, the inlays through it and stuff. It's beautiful.
Lovely.
Well, it's Paddy's Day. I'll do a Paddy's Day song and then we'll see what. On Raglan Road of an autumn day, I saw her first and knew that her dark hair would weave a snare that I might one day rue. I saw the danger and I passed along the enchanted ways, and I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day.
Lovely, man. Very nice. Wee bit. Very, very nice. So, you're getting a load of clappy hands here.
Clappy hands.
yeah, so you know it's good. So Brendan asks, what's your favourite bar crowd thing you'd hear from a bar gig?
So Brendan and I used to be in a band together way back in the day. What did he ask? What's your favourite
bar crowd thing that you'd hear here at a gig? And he said his is play a good one now.
Play a good one. Now, the one that I got all the time was, here, mate, do you know Wonderwall? Or no, it wasn't that. It was, here, mate, do you know any Ed Sheeran? No. All right, well, play Wonderwall. And I swear, that wasn't even a one-off thing. That was a twice a gig, every gig thing. Like, here, mate, do you know any Ed Sheeran? No. Will you play Wonderwall? And then what I loved to do was go, Wonderwall? Who sings that? And they're like, Oasis. And I'm like, I've never heard it. And they're like, you've never heard of Wonderwall? No, never heard of it. Oh my God, I can't believe you've never heard of Wonderwall. I said, maybe. No, I don't know it. And you just see them getting wound up and wound up. It's brilliant.
I always say, yeah, oh, Wonderwall, the Ryan Adams song.
Oh, brilliant, yes.
Real very slow.
Yeah, morose version of it, yeah. Surprise is beautiful.
I was curious about this because, you know, doing music, you obviously get it from your family and friends, you know, and that work colleagues even. We'll be seeing you up there with Ed Sheeran one day. You know, give us a shout when you're on your first tour with Ed Sheeran. And like, have you ever retrospectively went in and done cover gigs and someone's ever asked you to sing an Ed Sheeran song and you thought, like, you know, I've just been off on tour with them?
I haven't done a cover gig in a long time. And to be honest, if you offered me a grand right now to go and do one, I don't think I could do one because I haven't done one in so long. But I have done gigs. Like, I remember finishing that tour with Ed, and then my next tour was a very busy tour. Like, loads of people were buying tickets for that tour. And I remember asking people in the crowd, because at this point I had three songs out, you know, and it's kind of hard, no matter how good you are, if you've three songs or four songs that people can listen to, doing an hour and 20 minutes at a gig, you have to do just a few covers. And I remember asking, you know, every night, has anybody got a song they'd want to hear? And the amount of Ed Sheeran's that you would hear. But I just played them because why not? Like, I mean, you know.
Oh, no, sorry, at your own gigs.
These
sorry,
were at my own
okay,
gigs,
I got confused
yeah.
there. Because right, yeah. I thought you meant you played them at Ed Sheeran's gigs.
Oh, right, no. How funny would that be to, like, play his songs before he's played them? Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
I'm sure you're sick of hearing this question, but how was that? Can you give us any like clickbait title? You know, clickbait millionaire title. Ed Sheeran steals plectrums from up and coming independent artist, or was he just totally dead on?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I'd love to give you a clickbait of some sort, but in truth, there isn't a bad bone in that man's body. He is as incredible as they come, you know. And I know that I personally, from my experience, I can see a lot of people that are like Marmite with him, you know, people either love him or hate him. But I like, music taste to me is kind of like Marmite, where you either love it or hate it. I love Paul Brady. It doesn't mean that everybody has to love Paul Brady. You know, your own taste is your own taste. But what you can't take away from Ed is his passion, his drive, his hunger, his enthusiasm, his ability to wow a crowd, and his desire to help you be a better artist. Like, that's the one thing that every show he would come and watch my show and come out and give me advice on anything, whether it was selling merch. And like, I remember one time we were playing in Germany, and he watched the show and said, you know what you should do tomorrow night? You should take your CDs and hold them up so that people, because we talk quite fast, you know, the Irish talk quite fast. So he was saying, you should hold them up because English is their second language. So you should hold them up so that if they're not registering it, they see what you're talking about. And that night I sold an extra like 50 CDs or something. And then the next night he said, do you know what you should do tonight? You should hold them up and then point to the corner that you're going to be so that everybody who's in there, when they turn to leave, they're going to know, if I go that way, I'm going to meet Ryan and buy a CD. Sold another 50 more that night. And it's just like, he is a force to be reckoned with. And anybody who doesn't care for his music, that's your musical taste and that's fine. But I get real issues when people are like, he's this and he's that. And it's like, you've no idea. That guy is sensational. But no, I can't give you clickbait. I'm trying to think of something to give you clickbait.
Could I say that I misheard you and Ed Sheeran steals Ryan McMullen CDs or something like that?
Yeah, he stole... but you know, the sad thing is, he'd probably steal my CDs to give it to his really big up in the industry friends and say, hey, I stole these off this guy just to give it to you. You know, it's that kind of thing. Yeah. He's just a superstar. You know?
I guess as well, the probably when he kind of came into the mainstream, I think he kind of went from being like, I don't know how to describe it, a known, like a Radio 1 artist, to being the biggest thing in the world quite quickly in people's eyes. But before that, he was really, really hustling. Like, he was busking and like doing, he was 16. And I think when he started kind of getting a bit of traction, you know, I don't know, but like 5 or 6 years after that. So he's probably grown up same sort of, like picked up the same sort of traits and ideas that you have from doing the, you know, the cover gigs as well. Yeah. You know, how to work an audience, doing the main stage at Glastonbury by yourself with an acoustic guitar, as you said, whether you like his music or not, you know, I was there, people enjoyed it, you know, and it wasn't looked upon as like a failure by any means. It was like, what a gig. So it's just amazing, the control, like.
Yeah, and I say that to a lot of people too who've kind of spoke to me about it, and it's like, go and watch one of his shows and tell me what that guy doesn't transform you, because there's nobody in the world could do what he does as a one piece. Like, I don't care who you are, Beyonce is phenomenal, but you put Beyonce on a stage on her own, no backing track, no dancers, no band. She doesn't do, even if she could play guitar, she's not going to wow the way Ed just pulls you in, man. He's so good. And it is what it is, you know.
He's the biggest, one of the biggest artists in the world for a reason, I'm sure. But moving back onto yourself, you've a string of shows coming up, and you've already sold out the Waterfront Hall, which is crazy, and you've a sack on one. I'm not sure what albums mean anymore, but I don't think there's too many artists who haven't released an album who have sold out a gig of that size. How does that make you feel? Is it just sink in?
You know what? I love it and I'm very proud of it, but then I also have to remind myself it's a sign of the times more than blowing smoke. You know, it's like albums don't mean as much anymore, therefore don't take that, you know, like, because albums don't mean so much anymore, it's not about the album being out that people buy the tickets. They buy the tickets because it's all single based. But I do love the fact that, it's the same as like headlining Custom House Square. I think I was the only person that ever headlined that being without an album, you know. And I love them kind of wee notoriety things, but I'm also very aware that it's also just a sign of the times. I'm not doing anything special. It's just, it's a wee bit of the sign of the times. But I never thought in a million years I'd be playing the Waterfront Hall as a headline, never mind doing two of them. And the second one is pretty close to selling out. I didn't even realize until I got a sort of message about it the other day. Because booking agents have all been off with this whole thing, because why would you pay people to, when gigs aren't happening, you can't really put gigs on, you know?
Not booking much.
Exactly. And but now things are kind of starting to move, and I've noticed booking agents starting to get in touch again, and we got a ticket update, and I was just like, holy crap, the second one's really close to selling out. And I never thought I'd play there and sell it out once, never mind twice, without at least a body of work going on. You know, I still haven't released the album, so.
Well, like, I think you do have a body, like, you know, I was looking back, you do have probably an album worth of songs out there, whether you are happy with them or not. Do you know what I mean? Like, there is, your journey has been recorded.
Yeah, but, like. And I do, like, this was a whole thing at the beginning of the album process, because in hindsight, what I should have done was made the album. I wanted to do a specific album, and I kept taking the advice of like labels and people like that who said, no, don't do that yet. We'll facilitate all that kind of stuff. And then labels are so fickle, to be honest, like, especially majors more so. But and then what ended up happening was I ended up releasing a string of singles, and some of them just weren't, like, if it was an album, I would have picked three singles and the rest just would have been album tracks. So that was kind of a thing that I always thought, not that I missed out on, I just think that was something that I wanted to do, was to release an album of them songs. But now I can't do that, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. But I get what you mean. There is a body of work out there, but I mean, kind of from start to finish, it was written in a period of time where you're in a period of, like, a specific headspace, start to finish. And yeah, you know, albums are different, I guess, and I would have loved to have done them that way, but we've got this one coming, so it's fine.
Yeah, no, I think it's probably a thing artists think about, myself included, too much, and it's probably, it'll happen when it happens. But last question on it, last two questions on that. Are you nervous, and do you need a support act?
Do you know what?
How many people have tried that one on you?
Yeah. And the answer there is, actually, I do have a support act, but it's Belfast. I might be allowed another one. So we'll try and figure that out, because...
Yeah, good, you know, man. Yeah. We'll slip you some whiskey. Yeah. All right.
But I'm not nervous. Like, I've never... The only time I've ever been nervous on a stage, genuinely, like, full nerves, was I did a show in the Ulster Hall at Christmas, and there was no crowd there, just cameras. And I was nervous then because the energy of the crowd wasn't, I wasn't swapping energies out. I was just, I felt very strange. And I don't, yeah, like, nerves to me, I love being on the stage. Like, we call it Dr. Stage, because no matter if you're feeling down or if you're feeling hungover or whatever it is, the stage is the cure. Like, the amount of times I've been hungover and wasn't in any way ready to do a show, and two songs in on a stage with people just cures you, and all of a sudden you're in it and it's great. And you're not worrying about your rent. You're not worrying about your phone bill. You're not worrying about, you know, stupid crap. You're just, all you're focused on is the show. But no, I'm not nervous. I'm so excited for it. I can't wait for music and musicians, especially touring musicians, to get out there and do what they do best. Because I love being a musician, but I, at heart, I'm a touring musician. I love to perform. And that's just how it is for me. I need that I need to see faces, whether I recognize anybody or whether I truly see any of them. I need to see people in order to give what I truly want to give. Like, so bring it on is what I say.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. That's brilliant, Moran. I'm so glad you've done this. Can I ask you, we have a bit of a co-host. He kind of, it's a guy called Peter the Heater Clark. And he comes on to Liquid Chords and he asks a few questions for our guests. So could I leave you in the capable hands of Peter? And then I don't know if you're feeling it, but maybe just play us out with a wee, even another verse of Raglan Road, if that was cool.
Yeah, whatever. I'm here for you. So, but first of all, before you go, thank you for this.
Yeah. No problem.
Normally, I don't drink whiskey before sunset, but since since you sent it, I'll have one now. For St. Patrick and for Dead Rabbit. Haven't even opened it. It's a lovely sound though, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that's how you know it's good.
Yeah. Slantcha.
Cheers, Slantcha. Woo. Oof. Street, it's good.
It's strong but smooth.
So this is...
Yeah.
So here he is. I'm going to introduce you here to Peter the Heater Clark.
Cool.
I think he's a bit of a maverick.
Oh, there he is.
Peter?
Oh, hello.
Hiya, Peter. How are you getting on? Are you sleeping?
Is that bloody Concha again?
Yeah. Yeah, it's me. You know...
How are you?
We've got Ran on here. Ran McMullen. You said you had a few questions for him.
Yeah, man. I'm so excited to meet you.
Yeah. I can tell by your ready for bed face.
Listen, I'm a bit jet lagged.
Oh, shit, really? Right?
Yeah. It's not that I've been flying anywhere, but I've been playing a lot of Microsoft Flight Simulator. You ever play it?
No.
Oh, man. Bill Gates doesn't tell you, but there's jet lag involved. Anyway, listen, I've been listening to your song, the one about David Bowie when he's listening to the radio.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite part is the detail about your friend who's talking to Rory McIlroy.
No, John McEnroe.
Is he a golfer as well?
No, he's the tennis player.
He's the one who gets quite angry.
I'm going to have to look him up on Google. I'll do it later. But listen, man, I love your songs. I love your stuff. I love you. I'm a huge fan. I had a question for you. Do you know what day it is today?
Wednesday, right?
I think it's St. Patrick's Day, no?
What? St. Patrick's Day today?
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day today.
I thought it was Cabbage and Ham Day today. Oh, no.
Ooh.
I'm supposed to be...
Yeah, I think,
have you ever ate cabbage and ham? Like, I've never ate cabbage and ham. And everybody's posting photos of cabbage and ham, and none of them are from Ireland. And I'm going, have I missed something? Are we supposed to eat cabbage and ham today? Like, I've never done that.
I know, I can't even eat ham. I'm a vegetarian, but the cabbage is lovely. It's really good. Cabbage and whiskey for sustenance. Here, Ran, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for doing this. Will you just give us one, just a bit more, play us out? Is that cool?
Sure. Cool.
I hear, by the way, did you notice on, I don't know if you're listening to the Luke Kelly Dubliners version of this. I do like a version of Raglan Road. Have you ever listened, and the timing of it is so strange?
So strange, yeah. It's the picking of the guitar. It's like, so it's like a 5-4 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Good old 4-4.
Yeah, so I just do it in a 3-4.
Well, thanks a million, man. We'll let you go off this. Cheers.
You're all good. I'll just finish with the last verse, I suppose. It's probably the best place to end it is at the end. On a quiet street where the old ghosts meet, I see her walking now. Away from me so hurriedly, my reasons must allow. For I have loved not as I should, a creature made of clay. And when the angel woos, the clay loose, his wings at the dawn of the day.
Brilliant, man. Well done. Class.
Cheers.
Really, really good. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and thank you again, man.
You too, man. Slantje.
Take care. Slantje.
Bye. All the best. See you. Bye.
I was 18 years old when I went down to Dublin with a fistful of money and a carload of dreams. Take your time, said my father. Stop rushing like hell and remember all's not what it seems to be. For there's fellas who'd cut you for the coat on your back or the watch that you got from your mother. So take care, my young bucko, and mind yourself well. And would you give this sweet note to my brother? At the time, Uncle Benji was a policeman in Brooklyn, and my father, the youngest, looked after the farm. When a phone call from America said, send the lad over, and my old fella said, sure it wouldn't do any harm. For I've spent my life working this dirty old grind, for a few pints of porter and the smell of a pint. And sure, maybe there's something you'll learn or you'll see if you can bring it back home. Make it easy on me. So I landed at Kennedy, and a big yellow taxi carried me in my bags through the streets and the rain. Well, my poor heart was thumping around with excitement that I hardly even heard what the driver was saying. We pulled in the shore parkways to the flatlands of Brooklyn, to my uncle's apartment on East 53rd. I was feeling so happy, I was humming a song, and I sang her as free as a bird. But the short in the story, when I found out that day, was Benji got shot down in an uptown foray. Oh, so while I was flying my way to New York, poor old Benji was lying in a cold city morgue. Oh, I called up the old fella and I told him the news. I could tell he could hardly stand up in his shoes. And he wept as he told me, go ahead with the plan, and you're not to forget to be a bright Irish man. So I went down to Nellie's beside Fordham Road, and I started to learn about lifting the load. But the heaviest thing that I carried that year was the bittersweet thoughts of my hometown so dear. I went home that December 'cause the old fella died. Had to borrow some money off fell on the side. Oh, and all the bright flowers and brass couldn't hide the poor wasted face of my father. We sold up the old barnyard for what it was worth, and into my bag stuck a handful of earth. And I boarded a train, and I caught me a plane, and I find myself back in the U.S. again.
Belfast, this is your verse. It's been 22 years since I've been born. Yes, I'll be here. Correct life and form. But I'll never forget the green grass and the rivers as I keep blonde order on the streets of...